KPCW News, time is 8:06. You're listening to the Local News Hour. This is Roger Goldman. Coming up, we'll be speaking with Summit County Deputy Public Works Director Austin Weeks. We're going to talk about how the county is preparing to keep the roads clear this winter season. Then Jeremy Rubel will stop by with a debrief on last night's Park City Council meeting. We'll finish our hour by talking with some Elks about their upcoming basketball program. But first, let's hear the weather. Nate, what have we got coming on? We got Nate Larson with ABC4.
Hey, Roger. Hey, Wasatch back. Yeah, we've got the cold start again this morning, so kind of a wash, rinse, and repeat from what we saw yesterday. No big pattern shift for today, even a few clouds around, but mostly sunshine. Otherwise, into the afternoon, temperatures climbing to about 47 for Heber. Overnight lows, at least with temperatures into the weekend, I should say, a little more seasonal with southwest flow picking back up. So overnight lows back in the 20s. Should see highs near 46 tomorrow, upper 40s on Sunday. A weak system passing to the north of us will generate partly cloudy skies on Sunday. Otherwise, south flow increasing even more on Veterans Day with low 50s. That's ahead of our next front. So we'd have a storm system in the works for late Monday into Tuesday. It should bring some snow showers to Park City. Still kind of up in the air on the overall strength of the storm, but a little bit of moisture is expected. We'll drop to about 40 degrees for the high. Partly cloudy skies Wednesday into Thursday, but less likely of any chances of moisture after Tuesday. Heber looking at 47 for the high today. Overnight lows in the teens into Saturday. 50 tomorrow, mid-50s on Sunday. So gorgeous weather this weekend across the Wasatch Back. Should see that nice warm-up with 57 into Monday. Increasing moisture late Monday with rain and snow showers expected Tuesday in Heber with partly cloudy skies Wednesday and Thursday. Temperatures back in the upper 40s, on Wednesday, about 56 on Thursday as well.
So, Nate, yesterday as I was driving by Deer Valley, I saw the snow guns going full blast. As we're looking at this week, how many days do you think they're going to be able to do that in terms of, like... Go ahead.
Overnight lows are definitely going to be cold enough, I think, for them to continue to make snow overnight during the daytime. I think over the weekend that will be impeded. But good news is, as I was looking, I mean, we have a few systems line up, one Tuesday next week, another one by the end of next weekend. And then the long range forecast is calling for a probability of below average temperatures and maybe even wetter than normal conditions. So they should be able to continue to make snow at nighttime, and then also we should add a little bit more from Mother Nature, hopefully, in the next couple weeks.
And hopefully that gets us to where we want to be for a late November opening.
That's right. Well, we heard Solitude's at least opening up the beginner run today, and then Brian had down in southern Utah at least one lift with about four runs. So there's places to at least get your skis maybe rock-chipped a little bit early in the season. Huh?
All right, Nate. Thanks, and have a good weekend.
You bet. You too.
Let's do a little bit of local news. Brigham Young University quarterback Jack Retzlaff has the Cougars on the doorstep of the college football playoffs, and he has a new following. The Salt Lake Tribune reports Jewish people across the country are following the man who calls himself BY Jew at a school owned by the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Before the season started, analysts predicted the Cougars might be one of the lowest performing teams in their conference. Instead, Retzlaff has steered BYU to an 8-0 start, a top 10 ranking, and now has the Cougars favored to make their first college football playoff appearance. With the team's recent success, rabbis and Jewish people have latched on to BYU's run and are making the journey to Provo. This week, the Cougars will take on their in-state rival, the University of Utah, in an 8:15 game Saturday at Rice-Eccles. The Utes have not seen the same success with a 4-4 record this season. The so-called Holy War is a Utah tradition dating back to 1896. But the teams last met in 2021 when BYU ended the Utes' 9-game winning streak 26-17. A new sales tax in Summit County is poised to pass after county clerks released the first round of preliminary results Tuesday night. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports it may help avert a property tax hike.
Proposition 18, or the Emergency Services Sales Tax, won 3-1 voter support after 12,000 votes had been tallied Tuesday. About 8,500 were in favor, 3,000 against. It would add a 0.5% to every purchase except gas, groceries, and prescriptions. And the Summit County Council indicated prior to putting it to a vote, they'd prefer it over property taxes. Still, County Chief Financial Officer Matt Levitt recommended beginning the property tax increase or truth in taxation process just in case. His exchange with Councilmember Chris Robinson back in September suggests the council will nip that in the bud.
If the emergency services tax were approved, then your recommendation is to not do TNT on either, but you would leave a placeholder until then?
That is correct.
That's because the sales tax would balance the county government's proposed 2025 budget. But during the weekly budget discussion Wednesday, the Summit County Council did not mention the new sales tax election or property taxes. Council members still have another month to adopt a budget. It's unclear what, if anything, they'll want to cut from it with the sales tax likely to pass. The tax would kick in halfway through next year and is estimated to cover a $7 million gap in the budget. It would generate double that every year thereafter. It's called the Emergency Services Sales Tax because of what state law allows it to fund. That's search and rescue, emergency medical services, waste disposal, police, fire protection, and avalanche forecasting, freeing up money in the general fund for other needs. Those who support the sales tax argue it allows tourists and visitors to Summit County to share the cost of the services they use. Levitt says visitors account for 65% of county sales tax revenue, and when it comes to emergency responses like search and rescue, authorities say non-Summit County residents account for nearly all of its rescue calls. Board members at the nonprofit Friends of Summit County Search and Rescue organized a campaign in support of Proposition 18 in the run-up to the November 5th election. That included a pro statement which appeared in Summit County's voter information pamphlets. No one submitted a con statement for Prop 18, and Utah law does not require both. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Hi, I'm Julie Hopkins with KW Park City Keller Williams Real Estate. I love our great community and all the amazing nonprofits that make it the fantastic place it is. And it's a pleasure to support the KPCW Local News Hour with Roger Goldman to stay up to date on the critical issues facing our community, as well as the human interest stories that are the heartbeat of our town. Real estate information, jhparkcity.com.
Republic Services, a proud supporter of KPCW, reminds you that clean, dry, and empty plastic containers, cardboard, tin, and aluminum cans are accepted in your curbside recycling cart. Plastic bags of any kind should never be put in your cart. More information at summitcountyrecycles.org.
KPCW News Time is now 8:13. Developers got the go-ahead from Wasatch County Council to build a 75-foot golf lodge near the Jordan L. Reservoir. As KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports, the approval took months and drew criticism from the locals.
The lodge, which is part of the Sky Ridge development across US 40 from Deer Valley East Village, will stand 75 feet tall and include 64 condo units, plus three more for veterans and military members. For plans to move forward, developers needed special exceptions for the height of the building and an off-site parking lot. They asked Wasatch County leaders for a legislative development agreement, which bends the rules for a specific project without rezoning the whole area. At a Wasatch County Council meeting Wednesday, council members unanimously voted yes to the LDA. But the approval only came after numerous rounds of criticism and questions from locals who believe the project is too big and too tall for the neighborhood. At Wednesday's public hearing, Hideout Town Council member Jonathan Gunn said he's fielded questions from numerous Hideout residents about the project. He says the town's location across the reservoir from Sky Ridge means they'll be affected by the height.
It is Hideout that'll be looking at the 75 foot, and it is those residents that have raised lots of concerns. Unfortunately, at their most recent meeting, they didn't open it up for public comment. So there's a lot of people in Hideout that feel like they can't be heard.
He asked the county council to delay its vote and asked the developers to come meet with Hideout residents.
Not say no, delay until such time as the developers will do an interactive presentation. Doesn't have to be fancy, doesn't have to be in person, but give the Hideout residents some information and the opportunity to ask questions and get their concerns addressed.
His fellow town council member, Bob Nadelberg, echoed Gunn's request.
It looks nice, but I just don't understand why we need another hotel and another tiny little golf course in what is a beautiful plot of land when we already have the big Deer Valley East development going on.
But the Sky Ridge attorney flatly declined to hold a public meeting in Hideout. Wasatch County Council member Kendall Crittenden was similarly unconvinced.
Granted, when that 75-foot building goes up, you'll see it. But to say that it's going to be a distraction clear on the other side...
Councilmember Eric Rowland agreed. He compared Hideout residents' objections to if he, a Heber resident, complained about a new development in Midway, a similar distance.
Do we want to start to entertain such a large bubble of comments when you're dealing with people who are literally just looking at it from a distance? And I would no sooner be expected or feel entitled to say that to anyone in Midway from my perspective in my home looking across the North Fields.
Councilmember Spencer Park said there have been plenty of opportunities for locals to voice their concerns. The County Planning Commission, the Jordanelle Specially Planned Area Planning Committee, and the County Council all held public hearings. Councilmember Luke Searle, meanwhile, had questions about the project's partnership with the Military Installation Development Authority, a state agency originally founded to benefit veterans and members of the military. Three rooms in the lodge will be designated for MIDA use, with unspecified meaningful discounts.
If a military family came in and those three units were taken, like, what would happen? Or if there were six units that were dedicated to MIDA, if there weren't those families there, could those potentially be used for the lodge? I just worry about that when you use the word meaningful.
A MIDA representative didn't directly answer those questions, but said the number of military units was balanced with the number of units available to the public. Wasatch County Council members voted unanimously to approve the legislative development agreement. According to County Manager Dustin Graybaugh, it's the second LDA the council has considered, despite many other applications. The other LDA was granted for a Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints temple to be built just east of the Heber city limits. Litigation over the legality of that development agreement is ongoing. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Well, the weather this week has made it pretty clear that winter is very much upon us. Keeping the roads in Summit County passable all winter is but one of the jobs of the Summit County Public Works Department. And here to help us understand just what that job entails is Deputy Public Works Director Austin Weeks. Morning, Austin. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. How are you this morning?
Excellent. So today was a nice, crisp day, chilly days. Makes you sort of think about the snow season that's upon us. But let's start with some numbers. How many miles of road do you have to keep clear in the county?
I believe there's around 300.
Wow. Are you responsible for...
I don't actually have that in front of me.
300 is close enough. And are you responsible for the portion of state roads like 224 and 248 in the county or strictly the other roads?
We strictly do the roads in unincorporated Summit County. The towns, cities, they take care of the things within their boundaries, and UDOT has the interstate and highway system.
Okay. So as you get ready to do this, how many pieces of equipment do you have to mobilize to do a road clearing?
So in a storm that covers the whole county, we will have 16 trucks and a couple of loaders, and then we have some other equipment we bring in depending on the storm.
Okay, so the trucks sound like the most common piece of equipment. Are those big trucks that have the big plows in front of them?
Yes, they are the plow trucks.
And can those do all the kinds of roads, or do you have to use some smaller pieces of equipment on some of the sort of less wide or less sort of large roads, for lack of a better term?
No, we usually use these.
Okay. And how many, so you got 16 trucks, a variety of other equipment. How many drivers do you have to keep on staff in order to be able to react?
We have 18 people as plow operators right now, two mechanics. So around 20 right now is our full staff.
And in a big storm, do you ever have to, or are you able to augment that with additional drivers, or do we have to deal with, do we have to fight with the army we already have?
We go with what we have. We don't have anybody additional to stand by. We try to manage the hours of the operators we have.
And are these all full-time, year-round employees, or do you do some seasonal hiring?
Nope, everybody is a full-time employee.
Okay, so it's 2:30 in the morning, and the snow's coming down like crazy, and there's school's going to start. Talk about the process. Is there a control room? Do you sit somewhere and, you know, watch the weather and sort of push the button and start calling people? How does it work?
So we do. We watch the weather. We have three area supervisors who are also plow operators, and they're, when the storm's coming in, they're out there and preparing to call the crew out. If we know it's going to be there and it's coming in, we will have our operators report at 4 a.m. and they go to work.
And you know, if in an ongoing storm, how many times do they have to plow during a day? I mean, I'm trying to visualize sort of the fatigue factor.
It can become monotonous. They'll start out and they hit the school bus routes, the main roads first, and then they move on to the secondary routes and the subdivisions and cul-de-sacs. And once everything's cleared or opened up, I should say, they start over. And we just continue to do that. Our hours are 4 to 10. We're off the road by 10 p.m. And if it continues, we start over the next day.
So you will not start until 4 a.m. regardless of how deep the snow is. You don't ever start before that?
We do not.
Okay. And talk about what substance. Do you use sand or salt, or do you spread anything in addition to sort of plowing?
Yes, it's sand. It's a salt mix. We get it from southern Utah down by Gunnison. It's the red salt you see on the trucks, and it comes mined, so there's grit in it, and that helps with traction, melting snow.
And do you have any idea how much you sort of buy to get ready for the season?
To get ready, we fill up our storage bins, and that's about 3,000 ton that we have sitting there, and then we'll augment throughout the year with what's needed.
And do you have any special plan? How do you get ready for the season? I mean, do you have like training sessions, and do you have meetings to talk about things that are different, or is this pretty much the same as it was last year?
No. Well, it is pretty much the same as it was. We have new people, and we take advantage of what training we can get from people like the local government's trust, and we'll also sit down, talk through what may have changed, what roads may have added, and procedures.
And, you know, you mentioned before that there's a priority list, and the first thing would be the school bus routes, then the secondary roads, and finally the rest. So people get frustrated because their residential neighborhood hasn't been plowed yet. Is that typically because the snow is ongoing and you sort of have to maintain these priority roads first?
We maintain the priority roads first, and even if the snow is ongoing, once we open them up, we try to move on to the secondary routes and the cul-de-sacs. It just, depending on the storm, it may take a little bit more time to have everything cleared.
Now, I know that there are some things that listeners can do to sort of help facilitate your ability to plow. Can you talk a little bit about the problems with parked cars and other things that people can do to help you guys get your job done?
Absolutely. They can help us out with that. So the cars parked on the side of the road, they become a hazard. We have to go around them. We give them a wide berth, so the snow builds up around them, and that causes a hazard for the rest of the driving public. If it freezes, then it's more of a hazard for our plows. It's the same thing if you clean your driveway into the road. It becomes more of a hazard for the plows and everyone else traveling that road. And just the nature of the plow, probably if you clean it into the road, it's going to end up down the street in your neighbor's driveway.
So what should people do? I guess what you're saying is that when you clear your driveway, you should push it onto the side of your property and not out into the road.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. And does the equipment operate? Obviously, you're operating in some really difficult conditions. What kind of traction devices do you have to help these plow trucks? Or are they just so heavy that they can ride right through the snow?
We go through everything in the fall, mm-hmm. a little earlier in this time of year, make sure our tires are good and everything else. We have a couple of loaders that we use to plow, like in the Summit Park area, and those are chained up for more traction. A lot of our smaller trucks, I guess you'd call them. They're called a bobtail. They are four-wheel drive, so
I just
basically make sure. Oh, go ahead.
I have to guess that Summit Park has got to be some of the more challenging. Those roads in Summit Park have to be some of the more challenging ones for snow clearing.
Yeah, they're steep. We have others that are comparable. Every area is just a different challenge, quite honestly.
Where are there other sort of steep roads that present those kinds of challenges? Any of the roads in Deer Valley that kind of steep?
Deer Valley is incorporated Park City, and we don't go there.
You don't have to do there.
Do not. Nope, no worries.
Okay. All right. Anything else you want to add before we go?
Sure. I just want to – let me throw out a few safety reminders. You know, if we could give the plows a little bit of space, those things, they don't stop on a dime, and you hurry to get in front of them, that causes issues. We'd like to keep our drivers safe. If you want to flag down the plow, it's probably not a good idea to run out in the street. Like I say, they don't stop on a dime. They are large. And then another thing is don't build snow forts and things like that in the berms along the side of the road. Our operators could come by clearing the storm and not be able to see you. So they're out there, and all the credit goes to them. give them a break.
All right. We've been speaking with Deputy Public Works Director Austin Weeks about how we keep the Summit County roads clear. Well, I'm going to thank you in advance because we could not move through this town unless you guys cleared those roads for us. So thank you, and thanks for spending time with us.
Thank you.
Well, the Park City Council held its regular meeting last night and yesterday afternoon. Here with a debrief is Council Member Jeremy Rebell. Good morning, Jeremy.
Good morning, Roger. How you doing?
Good, sir. Thanks for being here. I take it that a lot of time was spent yesterday on Main Street.
It was.
And, let's talk a little bit about, you know, what was the agenda item, and then we'll get down to some of the specifics.
Yeah, so large agenda item, to your point, right? There's been a committee working on what we're calling the Main Street Area Plan. You'll see it abbreviated MSAP.
MSAP.
MSAP, that's right. They've been doing some pretty transformative work and dreaming big. That was kind of their charter. You know, what does the future of the Main Street area look like 10 years from now? And how does it support the city going into, you know, the next 50 years, right? Whatever number you want to pick, but into the future. And we saw that plan. It was kind of presented as that here's the findings of the committee and some recommendations of things we may want to pursue. It's all at the concept level right now, right? So the idea being dream big. Some of the stuff seems less feasible than other stuff, and we know that. But it doesn't mean we don't try to pursue those concepts, right? And what those concepts ultimately look like, TBD.
I want to spend some time going through those concepts, but I want to take a step back first because one of the things that is commonly spoken about in town is that Main Street is the jewel of Park City. It is what drives the tourism other than the mountains. But you saw some statistics that really are inconsistent with that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about inconsistent. I think what we saw were some statistics that since 2020, visitation has declined and spending commensurate with that has declined a bit. And it's not a trend we want to see continue, right? So, I guess your statement holds. Spending in the city overall is up, and spending in the Main Street area is down.
Right.
How can we buck the trend and get it back to at least growth with the city would be a good goal.
Okay. So, I'm sure there was some discussion, and maybe it's just speculation, as to why that's happening. Was there some discussion as to, you know, what is causing this decline?
Not a lot.
Okay.
Not a lot. Really, most of the discussion focused on the future, what we do moving forward.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about that. First of all, starting from the biggest of pictures, I always like to ask this question. We're looking at a Main Street that is largely private property, so trying to understand what are the tools and levers and what is the appropriate role for government in visualizing that future?
Well, we have a bunch of tools in the toolbox here, right? One is land use, so what's permitted to happen where. Another is the transportation network. Another is the traffic circulation, how we use right-of-ways, so like the, you know, pedestrian experience, sidewalks versus roads, parking policy. All those kinds of things.
Well, let's start to break down how some of those things, you visualize some of those things in this plan.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start with pedestrian access. What was sort of thought about with respect to changing the sort of vehicular use of Main Street and sort of trying to emphasize more pedestrian access?
Yeah, this was really exciting to see. And it was also acknowledged by a couple of the committee members who were at the meeting last night that this was the one item that was the most contentious within the committee. So I'll acknowledge here on the radio that this is not a unanimous recommendation from that committee. But the goal here is to improve the pedestrian experience on Main Street. We know it's a steep slope for people.
Can't change that.
Can't change that. We know that the sidewalks are narrow and even more narrow in certain places, and that becomes a challenge. The vehicles going up and down the street and parking on both sides of the street also, you know, impacts that experience. So what was presented was a one-way Main Street, kind of from top of the hill towards the bottom of the hill, I believe, in the rendering anyway. There'd be parking on one side of the street so folks could pull off and drop people or, you know, park as needed. And then the rest of the space would be for pedestrians essentially. And that's not true. There was also a transit lane for like a smaller trolley, let's call it, that would be able to go up the street, so to help people get uphill there. And like the current trolley, probably stop where needed, pick people up where needed, drop them off. And then the rest were sidewalks. So it made the sidewalks pretty wide and still provided that transit element and allowed the vehicles on there.
From a simplistic perspective, if I think of Main Street now, it basically has almost four lanes, right? Two of those are parking and two of those are vehicular. Mm-hmm. This would take it down to three, okay? We'd have a driving lane coming down, we'd have a parking lane, and we'd have a vehicle lane going up. So have I basically got that right?
Yeah, I think so.
And the rest
I mean,
of the space then goes to sidewalks.
Yes, and it was all one level that was stressed. Mm-hmm. So the transit lane could be looked at a little bit more like a flex area too, okay. Right? Mm-hmm. Like it gives us the ability to play with a lot of variables. And then if we do close the street for an event or something, it's all one level. So it's a much nicer experience than the current curb. Walking in and...
Of course, if there's no curb, given that we just had the snowplow guy, and I'm trying to figure out how you deal with the snow. Curb actually helps with the snow. But
there are very smart people who will figure that out.
Okay, and this concept would go all the way down to what is now the circle at the bottom of Main Street?
It goes all the way down to, I believe, the 9th Street Park.
Okay, all the way down to 9th Street. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know exactly. So this is where we get back into the concepts, right? So the initial concept could be broken out into phases, and then what do we do with the lower part? I don't have a good answer to that. But the concept being that we want to make the pedestrian experience much improved from where it is today.
Wouldn't you be driving a fair amount of traffic then onto Sweet Alley?
Potentially.
Right, because, I mean, obviously the cars have to go somewhere. It's a one-way street, right?
Yep.
So is the concept include any kind of alterations to Sweet Alley?
Yep, that was another major component of the concept was complete redevelopment of Sweet Alley and really activating it from retail to hotels to, restaurants and bars and everything in between.
So there'd be some stuff. Right now you have a very few, basically it's the back end of a bunch of buildings.
Right.
And so the concept is to try to create some front ends, if you will, for lack of a better term, for access. Now, I guess that would include the building that we're sitting in, which is the China Bridge parking lot. Mm-hmm. What was some of the concepts surrounding what would happen to the China Bridge parking lot?
So it'd be part of that whole re-envisioning, let's say, of the Sweet Alley area also as part of that, Main Street circle. The goal would be not to remove any net parking, let's put it that way. So there were a lot of different places where underground parking would be built to keep the number of spaces similar.
I'm trying to think of where you would dig that hole. Would that be under? Would that involve demolishing this building and digging underneath it, or how would you do that?
Potentially.
Talk about it?
Potentially, yeah. Right. One of the advantages of a steeper street and steeper Sweet Alley like we have is that you can do a lot of interesting things at grade level entries and then dig into part of it. And there are plenty of engineering solutions there.
Another concept that always gets talked about when we talk about Main Street is doing something with the post office.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the post office owns the post office, and that obviously presents a challenge. But what were some of the concepts, at least, that were discussed with respect to where the current post office is?
So there was this a discussion around how, we hear a lot of feedback. It would be really nice if there was some central plaza type concept in Park City where people can gather, want to hang out a little bit, where the transit center could feed into, and then be that sort of gateway to Main Street and Sweet Alley. So the concept was really to make that in the post office location. And there's some discussion around the history of the post office and which part is actually historic and what's been added on over time, and some renderings of what a plaza could look like. Pretty neat stuff to think about.
And does the concept include leaving some of the old building intact? Or would mm-hmm. Okay, so that would be sort of the center of that plaza, if you will, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, I don't know where necessarily it'd be located on it, but it would be part of it, the historic structure anyway.
How complicated is it to get the post? Would you have to like buy it from the post office? How would that work? Do we save a bunch of stamps?
that is above my pay grade, okay. Roger.
Okay.
I'm sure that it's not a simple process, but there is a process.
There is, okay. MARSAC. For years, we've heard that MARSAC is not adequately serving its function as City Hall. There's been talk about moving it. To what extent was the future of MARSAC part of this discussion?
It wasn't really part of it.
Okay.
This discussion assumes that MARSAC stays as it sits today.
As a City Hall?
Just as a building.
As a building, okay.
At the moment. We didn't talk about the use of MARSAC. There's a separate conversation going on within the city around the future use of MARSAC, mm-hmm. And those will have to be brought in together here.
You know, part of the reason I asked is that in the little drawing that here it says North MARSAC and Flagpole Boutique Hotel, which suggested to me that there at least was the potential for a different use, but or would that be possibly another building?
Possibly another building, and the use of MARSAC conversation, you know, like I was saying, is kind of a separate project going on.
Okay. Other interesting thing I saw in here was the possibility of a gondola. Mm-hmm. And of course, we keep hearing about potential gondolas either in the old Brewpub lot or maybe replacing Town Lift. What was discussed with respect to that?
So we talked a little bit about, there's two. So one of them would be a gondola on the Park City Mountain connection,
mm-hmm.
and down by that Town Lift Plaza currently. And the other one was a potential gondola from the Brewpub lot to Deer Valley. And there was some discussion that a new alignment being considered as compared to previous discussions where it would go down Deer Valley Drive. So this would go over the mountain. We haven't seen that alignment yet as a broader council, so I don't know much about it. But apparently there's an option there.
To do something like that, I guess, would require the purchasing of some air rights over some private property. So I imagine that's a little complicated, isn't it?
I truthfully don't know because I haven't seen the alignment.
Okay. The Park City, the one down at the current Town Lift, again, that I assume would be something that Vail would have to... Is this? I'm always struggling with, like, how do you guys do stuff? Is this like a Vail nudge kind of project where you try to encourage them to do it?
You know, things start from either direction, right? Like a private business can request it, or mm-hmm. the community can start some rumblings and go to the private business and say, hey, would you be interested in working with us on this? And I think that's the approach that we're taking with this area plan is, as a community, let's dream big, and then we can approach our partners and private businesses across the city here and see if they're interested in playing ball with us.
Now, I suspect that some of our listeners are thinking to themselves, you know, the last time we heard this dream big stuff, it was about that 5-acre parcel that's sitting there empty over in Bonanza. Are we starting another road where we're going to talk about it for 8 years and the Main Street's going to look exactly the same? And if not, how do we change that?
Yeah, I think we've learned a lot. We've learned a lot from that process. And one of those things is that this has to be realistic. So as much as we want to dream big in these concepts, and we're at that point, right? We're like, if we support the concepts, now let's make those concepts realistic in an implementation plan over the next 10 years, 8 years, whatever it is, and then start executing on it. So that we did chat about prioritizing some of these things and how that could look. And one of the conversations was, if we do that, and it's different than what was proposed last night, we understand that that might not be the most efficient way to go about it, but perhaps it could be the most realistic and get the most value sooner for the community out of it. And we challenge the team to come back with some options there.
That's what I was going to ask you. In other words, it seems to me that lessons learned, having a realistic timeline, if only a realistic time for making the decision made and driving toward that is pretty important.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And while we're on that subject, RFPs for Bonanza, are those back yet? And do you know anything about how many?
We don't have a number. That's not really how we play out the process at this point. There's a selection committee who's going to be reviewing the responses. Mm-hmm. We've heard that there was a great response to it, which is really exciting. We're looking forward to seeing them. Hopefully by the end of the year. It's an aggressive schedule, given the holidays and whatnot. But,
And for those who aren't familiar, I am a reformed government contracts lawyer, but for those who aren't familiar with procurement processes, let's talk just briefly about how that's going to work here. And it's interesting to me that the mere number of responses is not a public number. It is what it is, but envelopes come in, there's a committee. Talk to us about the process that they will go through to the extent you understand it.
Yeah, so the request for the proposals that went out had in some requirements, actually a number of requirements based on all our discussions to date. And the committee evaluates the responses based on those requirements, right? And says this answers the question well, this one doesn't answer the question well. And then they essentially make a recommendation to the council on who to select as a development or architect partner.
And so that will come out. You'll get a recommendation hopefully by the end of the year, and then the council makes the final decision.
That's right. Okay. Yeah, and I wouldn't be worried if it bled into early next year, given the timing. But the plan is, yes, they make that recommendation to council, and council makes the ultimate decision.
And I assume there's going to be some objective criteria. There'll be some scoring that you guys will get access to when they're done with their process.
I would assume so. Yeah. Not all that familiar with how this one's going to play out. It's a rather complex project. Yeah. So, if it comes as one big thing, or if it's broken into smaller things, or, how that works, we'll see.
Other things came up last night. The White Pine touring lease, that came up for a potential renewal?
Yep.
Okay, what was the discussion there?
It was just around how that looks for the next 5 years and building some, let's say, evolving the agreement to be on par with how we do things across the city with our recreation portfolio. Mm-hmm. So we basically directed staff to go work with our concessionaire and come back with what that could look like, and then we'll make a decision on proceeding.
Okay, so is there the possibility that that would go out for an RFP competitive process, or was the sense of council last night that you're probably just going to try to work to extend the existing contract?
I think the sense was that we would work to try to extend it. If we can't get to an agreement, anything's possible.
Okay. Anything else from last night that we should touch on?
Yeah, a few quick things here. Before I forget, I want to wish a happy Veterans Day to everyone in the community and a number of our city staff, including our mayor, who are veterans. We had that last night as presented by a Girl Scout troop, which was kind of special. Also, we talked about the new building going into City Park, the community center. That's an awesome and exciting project that's starting here. It's going to happen next year. It's going to add for more day camp. It's going to be a gathering space for folks. We're finally doing that. It's pretty cool. And then the pools at the PC Mark. If anyone hasn't seen those, I'm sure there'll be plenty of renderings coming up in the media here. Another really neat project, and we authorized moving forward there.
I saw something about that, Jeremy. The timeline for that, will that require the pools to be closed next summer?
One of the pools. I believe the lap pool is closing, and mm-hmm. and the recreation pool was staying open. I think I have that
will
right.
They do something like that, where they close one right. And do work on that, and then close the other one to work on that one. I mean, is that how it's going to work?
I believe so. Yeah. Okay. The idea is to keep one pool open
at all times.
Okay. Yeah. That's how we understood it.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, Jeremy, thanks for spending time with us.
Thank you. A lot going on.
Park City Elks Lodge 734 has a couple of events coming up. Here to talk about them, we have Elks members Jim Osselier and Cheryl Selznick. Good morning. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jim, you're not going to say hello.
I'm a little slow this morning.
All right, Jim, I'm going to give you the first shot at this because you're here to talk about Hoop Shoot.
Heck yeah.
What's Hoop Shoot?
What is Hoop Shoot? Great question. It's a free community event. And we're asking kids 8 to 13 to come out and shoot free throws. And we're going to do this at Basin Rec on November 16th, and I'll have more stuff on the website. But you may ask, why do that, right?
Why do that?
That's your next question,
Rod. That was my next question.
Yeah, I'm not too slow all the time. So anyway, Hoop Shoot was started in the 50s, and the genesis was like parents want their kids to be active, right? Even back then, I know these days electronics have taken over, and I've spoken to a lot of the PE teachers in town, like Jen Wheelwright. She's an icon chip. And if Norm Hader over in Heber Valley and JC Diston, these people realize that kids are not participating in sports. And so Elks had the vision of this back in the 50s, like, hey, let's get kids out there doing something active. And it's a lot of times, as sports are centered towards the fastest, the strongest people out there. And Hoop Shoot is kind of a free throw contest. A lot of people can go out there and do that. And we're encouraging, you know, parents to practice with their kids and get out there and do it and just get be active. And that's the genesis of it.
And how long have you been doing it here in Park City?
We've been doing it. This is our first year in Park City in years and years. We've been doing it up in Colville and over there and the other parts in Summit County because it is a Summit County event. Mm-hmm. But there's some new Elks involved, like myself. And so we decided to do a Basin Rec Little More Center.
And how many participants did you, do you know how many participants you had in the last year? So, you know, a benchmark to hold this
well,
against?
Well, you know, I actually have the history because mm-hmm. we track everything at Elks, who's been around since 1868.
I want to hear the 1924 statistic, but anyway, let's at least hear last year.
Well, kind of like a Rain Man, so be careful. So, you know, with COVID and just the participation in sports have been declining year to year. And mm-hmm. so COVID was a massive hit to the organization. So the statistics over the last 3 or 4 years has been like a 6% decline in active participation of sports in general. Mm-hmm. And Hoop Shoot has been about, you know, like a precipitous spot drop as well. It was actually the stats was 61% from one time.
Nationwide.
Yeah, wow. Nationwide, yeah.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about how the tournament will work. Are there different age groups, and so are the different ages in separate groups?
Yes, there are. Okay. So we're going to put people in the same age groups against each other. I guess that meant in a fun way, not against each other, but it is a contest. So at noon, the first bracket up is the 12 to 13 year olds, and then at 1:30 we have the 10 to 11, and then at 2:30, we have the 8 to 9 year olds. And so what the goal is, they come out, the guys and gals, they come out, do a couple warm-ups, they can have up to 5 shots, and then the contest is 25 shots. But yeah, it seems like a lot. So they do 10 in the first round, and then they take a break, and then they rotate back in and do another 15 shots. And so the best score out of 25 goes on. And there's a series of other competitions that go statewide, regional, and national. And the eventual winner actually gets their name in the Basketball Hall of Fame forever.
Now is this kind of like one of those ski races where we have someone set the pace that, Jim, you're going to go out there and shoot 25 three shows to set a benchmark?
Well, funny is, like, when I started talking to the parents and other Elks and parents of kids, like, they want to shoot too. And so, by the way, if time allows, we're absolutely having an adult hoop shoot. So get out there, everybody
in practice.
Yeah, I actually shot some shots yesterday, so I'm coming in hot.
How'd you do?
Not too great, but, you know, I'm ready to bring the heat because, you know, Park City's filled with all these athletic people, the pickleball people that, you know, kick my butt.
Okay, so in all seriousness, how many people from this, from the Park City or from the Summit County shootout will get to go to the next level?
Yeah, so it thins out pretty quick because it's just, there's just so many people because we do have like 10 lodges. And so we have other people participating in the hoop shoot. So it's going to narrow pretty quickly. Like the state competition, believe it or not, is only 2 people against each other. Yeah. And then they go to a regional because it thins
so
out pretty quick.
The one winner goes to regional?
Yeah. Yeah. The divisional, by the way, is over in Heber, which is great. That's going to be in January. So it's kind of nice. That's close by. For the winners from here to go over there, so there'll be a one. We're gonna have a winner from each age bracket, boys and girls.
Okay, and that was my other question: is are there separate brackets for boys and girls?
Yeah, absolutely. And the nice thing is also, Roger, we're having prizes for first, second, and third place. A little swag box, hoop box of goodies, and also we're gonna have like gift cards from like Billy's Barbershop, free haircut, Switchback Sports. But everybody's a winner, Roger. This is how X rolls. It's inclusive, and everybody's a winner. Everybody's going to get something. I have a T-shirt on, an Elk T-shirt that's pretty baller. I'll rotate around later for you.
Okay. And I noticed in the PR sheet that you sent me that they talked a lot about gritty kids.
Yeah.
What is that all about?
Yeah, well, you know, it came from corporate, you know, that there is a corporate structure at Elk. So they had the theme of grit. And, you know, everybody should go Google this. I actually went and listened to it. But there is a TED Talk on grit. So do TED Talk Grit and go find that. And that was kind of the genesis. And the cool thing about the video, not to go through all of it right now, I don't think we have time, but and it's not my talk, but there's a lot of statistics that say that people who have perseverance and grit in life are so successful later. And the idea of like, hey, I may not be the most athletic person, but I'm going to get focused. I'm going to try to shoot some free throws and see how I can do. And you don't have to obviously be super athletic to do that. And so people who have grit and a passion and a goal in life become more successful. And so that's where the grit story comes from.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want to come back and talk a little more about some of the other things Elks do, including possibly whether you're doing anything for Veterans Day. But Cheryl, I want to ask you about your program. Cheryl, I understand that the Elks Free Senior Citizen Appreciation Lunch / Entertainment event is coming up.
Yes, that's correct. And you know, Jim was just speaking about a youth event, and I might mention that Elks really concentrate on three groups of people that we support. It's the youth, the seniors, and the veterans. And so I'm here to talk about what we're doing for the seniors. And it's kind of came out of COVID as well, when many seniors were isolated and it was a really hard time for them. And so since then, during COVID and since, the Elks have been concentrating on trying to help seniors get back into the real world after COVID. And so this year we actually got a grant from the National Elks to do a special senior appreciation luncheon. And we chose the Saturday before Thanksgiving because that's the beginning of the holiday season, which can be really rough on isolated seniors. So we're trying to get as many, this is a free event open to anybody, and I hate to say this if you think you're not a senior yet, it's anybody 60 years of age or older. And it's gonna be a fun thing on Saturday the 23rd before Thanksgiving at the Elks Lodge. And yes, we do have an elevator to get people up to the top floor. That's been my most asked question. Or you can do your aerobic activity by climbing the stairs yourself. But we're going to be providing as many seniors as who want to come, and maxing out at our 150 limit that the fire department has said. So anybody who would like to sign up who is a senior in Summit County can do so, and we will give you a free luncheon provided with entertainment by a wonderful group called Swing Creek, who has played at the Senior Center in Park City before, and actually in the group is a gal who is a member of the Elks, and they play kind of classic, you know, swing jazz type of a thing. And after the lunch and the entertainment, we're going to have some games of bingo, and then everybody's going to go home with some kind of gift certificate to ease the food insecurity of the beginning of the holiday season. And this is going to be, the Elks are invited as well. I just talked to Jeremy on his way out saying, you are coming, because he is an Elk. I said, you are coming with your family? And he said, yes. So this is open to the Elks and to any seniors. And all the seniors have to do is just sign up so we know how much food to buy.
Okay, and what kind of food do you expect to serve?
So I've already just made arrangements that we're going to be, we just got Lush's barbecued. We're going to have brisket and all the trimmings, and then we'll have vegetarian options as well. And so it's not going to be a Thanksgiving meal.
I was going to say, a traditional holiday meal.
A traditional holiday meal, not turkey.
Brisket.
Brisket. Okay. Everybody loves the brisket. We talked to them about what we could do, and we had some more chickeny turkey options, but everybody loves the brisket.
And now, have you guys done events like this before?
So this is the first time that we've gotten this grant, and we've never done, we have fundraisers and we have luncheons and things like that. We have had in the past a St. Patrick's dinner where we invited the seniors from the Park City Senior Center, but this is different in that we're inviting any senior. You don't have to belong to a senior center. You just, you know, sign up, and we actually have a way for you to sign up on the KPCW Community Bulletin Board. Just look at November 23rd, or you can go to parkcityseniors.org, and there's a thing to click and sign up right there. But we do want you to sign up by next Friday so we know how much food to get. That's the only caveat.
Okay. So we've talked in the past about the relationship between the Elks and Veterans Projects. Do you guys have, are there any sort of commemorative things going on either locally or nationally by the Elks with respect to Veterans Day?
So with this respect to Veterans Day, we aren't doing anything ourselves on it. We have a the Utah Elks Veterans Chairman happens to be from our Park City Lodge.
Oh, who's that?
And it's Jean Combs, and she's a retired Air Force Colonel, mm-hmm. and she was actually on the Rose Bowl float last year, featured as the Air Force representative. But she has been organizing and doing many, many things with the veterans. We're going to be providing Thanksgiving dinner to some of the patients down in Salt Lake who are veterans who are not in the inpatient program, they're in the outpatient program. We're actually doing things with the veterans who go to the National Ability Center, providing snacks and food after they've had their activities. So we're getting, and this summer we had three events where we took veterans from the VA center to the Bees ball games. So,
pretty vibrant set of programs.
Very vibrant, but just nothing for Veterans Day itself.
Okay. Jim, anything else you want to touch on in terms of Elks activities before we go?
Yeah, no, I think we just love to get your parents and kids out to our event, food, prizes, and we really appreciate the PE teachers supporting us because it is a ground level word of mouth program. We don't really have a great registration process on kpcw.org. There will be a little link there with more information, and that's where you can find out. But we'd love to have you out there November 16th at noon.
Is there also a direct link from the Elks to this site or not?
It's a fancy Google Doc.
Okay.
So, yeah, we're a little old school still.
All right. All right. Well, thanks for spending time with us.
Thanks.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Thank you.